Researchers are studying areas hard hit by job loss and finding that jobless workers tend to move politically to the far left or the far right. While presidential candidates are trying to lure them, both Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders blame free trade for job loss. Agreements like NAFTA, which removed tariffs from products coming from Mexico into the U.S., flooding the U.S. with cheap goods made by low-paid labor. But wait, free trade backers say it lets us buy things at lower prices. It moves American workers away from low-paying dirty jobs. It improves the economy of poor countries, meaning less violence and migrants. Economist Gordon Hanson of the University of California, San Diego, is working on that study of voters in hard-hit areas. He also co-authored a report in January detailing how trade with China did cream U.S. jobs more than anyone thought it would. So he's against free trade, right? Wrong. Professor Hanson, have I got that right? You do believe jobs are lost, but you support free trade.
Funny as that may sound, that is what I believe, Robin.
Okay, so let's get started. And first, just a little background, because there has been free trade and trade agreements for decades. Why did it work better after World War II than it seems to be now?
Well, in the decades immediately after World War II, trade was primarily between rich countries. It was the U.S., Germany, Japan, France, and England all trading with each other. And that trade didn't have the same sort of consequences that you see when you're trading with low-wage nations. It wasn't displacing entire sectors like textiles and furniture that we've seen with expanding U.S. commerce with China.
So are both Trump and Sanders, and to a certain degree, other candidates, presidential candidates who now say they're against some free trade agreements, are they right that, in fact, free trade is now destroying our economy?
Well, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders did not happen by accident. We got ourselves into this predicament where we allowed negative consequences from trade to accumulate long enough that people are now upset. And there's good reason for them to be upset. That does not mean that trade on net is bad for the U.S. economy. It just means that we have done a poor job trying to improve the outcomes for workers who've been most negatively affected.
We'll talk more about this because many can clearly remember President Obama saying we were going to move people from low-paying and often dirty jobs to better jobs. They were going to be trained. And then there didn't seem to be the money for the training. Or what else happened? What happened? What went wrong with that thinking that, as they had traditionally, workers would move into other sectors?
You hit it the nail exactly on the head. It was the moving part that didn't work. What we haven't seen happen in the last decade and a half in response to greater competition with China is workers freely moving from one region to another, from one sector to another, as jobs have disappeared in certain parts of the U.S. economy.
And what could it take to make it happen?
Well, it's a bit of a puzzle. Economists long believed that the U.S. economy was a bit exceptional among richer nations and that our labor markets were very flexible. What we've come to realize is that labor markets aren't so flexible. Workers, in particularly at lower ends of the pay scale, don't move easily or quickly in response to bad economic outcomes.
Okay, so some people are suggesting that there be some kind of a program, literally, and obviously, you know, more has to be looked at. But let's keep going with some of both the criticism and the support of free trade. What about the headline in the New York Times last month? NAFTA may have saved many auto workers' jobs. In fact, Eduardo Porter went on to make the case that without NAFTA, there would be no Detroit at all.
So what NAFTA did was allow the U.S. to partner with Mexico to expand what you can think of as the North American auto complex. And that partnership allowed us to face competition from China and the rest of Asia much more robustly. China hasn't developed a world-class automobile sector. And the fact that U.S. and Canada and Mexico have worked so closely together is partly a reason for that.
So, in fact, you're saying that the ability to work with Mexico, to sort of outsource the low-paying jobs to Mexico, enabled Detroit to slim down to the jobs that were the more higher-paying jobs and, in partnership, at least save some sliver of the auto industry.
I think that's right. You think about what goes into making an automobile, and there's design, there's marketing, there's brand development that provide great jobs for U.S. workers. We've kept those jobs in the U.S. instead of seeing them relocate to Japan or to Shanghai because of the ability to share production with a lower wage country like Mexico.
Yeah. Well, Porter also goes on to say that NAFTA is getting blamed for things that were not of its making. There was an economic collapse in Mexico, had nothing to do with NAFTA. Auto workers in Detroit were also competing with American workers in the South who didn't have unions and had the lower lower wages right here in this country. And auto workers are also competing with robots from Japan and Korea. Talk about that sense that backers of free trade have, that we are now living in a global world where there are all sorts of other economic issues that we have to deal with.
So this is the real problem with the solutions that Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are proposing, is they want to try and turn back the clock. We now live in a fully integrated global economy. And just like you can't remove computer technology from the world today, it's hard to remove international commerce. It is part and parcel of how we make the things we make. Think about Apple's success. Apple's ability to develop innovative products depended in large part on the fact that Apple didn't have to focus on the production side. It could focus on design and innovation and development and let China do a lot of that production. Had we had barriers in place that prevented Apple from following that strategy, it might have been a much less innovative company. We're in this new world. We can't go back. We need to find ways of making the U.S. economy work as well as it can for everybody and not think that shutting down our borders will suddenly magically put us back in 1955.
Well, I can hear some people in Rust Belt, you know, towns saying, I'd be fine with Apple not being such a big company. I can't afford the iPhone anyway. But you're saying that horse has left the stall. What kind of wrench did China throw into all of this? It joined the World Trade Organization, but we'd already opened trade with China before that, and it has not been fair with its policies. It does not import as much as it exports. It fooled with the valuation of its currency. What has that done to this whole equation that economists always had that free trade would work well?
I think China's unfair trade practices get more play than they deserve. What was really distinct about China is that it was an absolutely enormous economy that went from being very, very isolated to being part of the global economy in the space of two decades. The magnitude of that change was bound to be incredibly disruptive.
But is that going to change? Because many economists are saying, look, free trade is not working as well now. But as China, for instance, has people who start demanding higher wages, you know, it will even out.
So our future relations with China are likely to going to look very different from what we've seen in the past 20 years. China is a higher wage nation. China is facing demands on the parts of its consumers for better access to goods, for cheaper housing, for a cleaner environment. This onslaught that we saw of large quantities of cheap goods just displacing so many U.S. sectors was a unique period in global economic history. That's now over.
Well, so, Professor, what else happens now? Because another goal of free trade with poor countries is to lift their boats as well. Because if you lift the boat of Mexico, fewer people come across the border, which statistically that's been happening in the last just the last few years. So what happens going forward? We've mentioned that American workers did not switch to other industry and trade seemed imbalanced. Donald Trump has been saying put huge tariffs on all items coming in from China. At least he said that once. He's since retracted it. What happens going forward?
Well, to improve prospects for American workers, and particularly those who've been hit hard by China and other changes in the U.S. economy, we've got to look internally first. Looking backwards, we've got big segments of U.S. society that have done very poorly over the past 20 years. And we need to think about how we help workers move into jobs and move off of disability insurance, move out of long-run unemployment, move out of regions where there's not much in the way of an economic future.
And by the way, we jump in and say part of your study showed how much the U.S. is paying to support the workers who've lost these jobs. And I'm sure it's not enough for them, you know, but it's costing.
It is costing, but it's costing in a way that's not good for those workers themselves or good for the rest of America. We've got policies in place that give workers an incentive to stay out of the labor market in order to get continued access to benefits. That's true in the shorter term with things like extended unemployment insurance or trade adjustment assistance, and it's true in the longer term with things like Social Security disability insurance. We'd be better off if we took that money and instead gave it to workers in the form of wage insurance or other policies that gave them a chunk of change when something bad happens that allows them to make the adjustments that work best for their particular situation.
Like a move or training or something, yeah.
Like a move.
Yeah.
And it's not one size fits all. We've got a set of policies that treat workers pretty uniformly, and it simply hasn't worked well.
And when it comes to relations with other countries, we're hearing people say things like, it has to be diplomacy. It has to be worked out on that level, not on a punishing tariff level.
So we've worked very hard since World War II to create a set of global institutions that manage trade and finance. There are a lot of imperfections in how they work. The World Trade Organization gets a lot of bad press. The International Monetary Fund gets a lot of bad press. But look at what has happened since 1945. You know, the living standards worldwide have improved pretty dramatically. And trade between countries and the flow of capital between countries is a very big part of that. It would be an enormous mistake for us to turn our back on the accomplishments of the post-war era. The populist strains in American politics right now take that tack as kind of the best way forward.
Economist Gordon Hanson of UC San Diego. Professor, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks very much for having me on the show, Robin.
I think you've managed to upset people on both sides of the debate.
That's part and parcel of life as an economist.
Well, thank you so much, sir.
It's been my pleasure.
And by the way, economists say manufacturing is disappearing globally. There's less to bring back to the U.S. So where will jobs come from? We'll follow that thread down the road.